Hi, I'm Brian Cohen.
And I'm H. Claire Taylor. Have you struggled to keep up with the fast-changing world of self-publishing?
Do you want to learn the latest news, tips, and tactics to help you sell more books now and into the future?
Welcome to the Sell More Books Show, a weekly podcast that gives you all the info you need to know in under an hour.
To save you time, give you motivation, and boost your publishing profit.
Enough waffling. Let's get started.
Okay, Claire, on with the show. Hey, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Sell More Books Show, episode 339. I'm Brian Cohen from the 5-Day Amazon Ad Profit Challenge, and I'm joined by H. Claire Taylor of FFS Media. Claire, we missed you last week, though we did have Jim Kukral on the show, which was a fun nostalgia trip. Always nice talking to Jim, but I'm happy to have you back. How are you? How was your week off?
My week off was so good.
Yeah?
It was so good. I think I read 7 or 8 books, and we took in a foster dog, which was kind of crazy for a while because we accidentally got 2. Like, as they were delivering the first foster dog to us and we were having our dogs meet it out front, another stray dog ran up.
Oh, no.
And we're like, what? And so we're like, well, I guess we'll have 2 tonight. So we had one night of like 2 dogs, and it was a boy and a girl, and neither were fixed, and it was just a little crazy. And then we got.
Did you have to chaperone?
We put them in separate kennels. We were like, yeah. we're not doing this. Got to save room for Jesus, as they used to say at my school dances. Yeah. Once we got the boy shipped off, we've had this female dog for a while. She's getting along with our dogs. And so it's just kind of been fun little diversion. I wouldn't want to have a break without any stress, you know? So we decided to introduce a foster dog.
Well, there's distress and eustress. I'm sure there was some positive stress in there.
Yeah. I mean, it's just so nice to have a week off. And the fact that my husband had the same week off and we got to spend a week together, it's the first time we've ever been able to do that. Well, first time we've done that since our honeymoon. So
yeah,
it was really
nice. That's amazing. Well, good. Well, I haven't had a week off because
I don't mean to brag, but I'm feeling very happy and focused and mentally clear right now. How about you, Brian?
Well, I'm going to take some of that. We're living in the crazy times. I think that I've definitely been a little stressed. I read the story today that more people are cracking their teeth than ever before, and it is due to stress. And so definitely take care of yourselves out there, because we are dealing with more stress than possibly ever in our lives. And so we do have to account for that. You can't just assume everything is going to go as it normally does go. You can't assume everybody is going to be at their happiest and nicest at all times. And I have no examples of this to share.
Yeah. I was reading an article about how lower serotonin levels actually increase people's desire to punish others.
So, oh, wow. No, I don't think you had shared that.
Yeah. Yeah. So it increases outrage and people's desire to see other people suffer. So it's literally like misery loves company. And we all have lower serotonin levels right now. I would feel pretty safe in assuming no one's like, this is the most serotonin. Like, I have serotonin to spare right now. So yeah, I think it's important to just like keep an eye on your body chemistry and figure out ways to like work with it, you know, complete those stress cycles, because we have this, it's the constant stress, the low grade everyday stress that takes the biggest toll on your body.
Yeah. Well, that's a really good note. Thank you. I think we all should. Kind to ourselves. So I've got my challenge coming up on Monday, October 12th. So I do hope, if you are not yet registered, you go to sellingforauthors.com/October. It's been really fun I've referred to it like it's the 5th challenge we've done. Been referring to it as the October of optimization, just trying to make little tweaks, not my strong suit, but making little tweaks to try to make it a better experience for everybody and try to get more subscribers more efficiently and all of that stuff. And that's been an eye-opener, just how you can have so many little blind spots with your book funnel always, always, always check the back of your book. Even after you think you've uploaded the right version, buy it again. Take a look at it. You want to make sure that your landing page works the way it should on multiple browsers. All those little things that you don't always think of. You want to make sure you do that.
That is so easy to overlook.
Yes. Yes. I'm not a big checklist person, but if you work with checklists and like checklists, make sure to include those items on your checklists. Claire, what do you have going now this week, now that you gotten supercharged, your series course done, you've had the week of rest and dog laxation? What's coming up?
On the writing front, I've just started the draft of my sci-fi comedy series. So that's great. Been really fun.
That's fun.
Yes, that I'm working on that. And I am working on some last minute stuff for an anthology I have coming up. And I am putting together a book for the Indie Author Alignment free course that I have. It's basically going to be that, but it's going to be a lot more information about getting yourself aligned so that you can optimize and enjoy your career as much as possible. And so that you have that, you know, to help people find that sense of purpose that's really grounding and energizing. So I am putting together a book for that.
That's really cool. Well, good luck with that. You'll keep us up to speed.
Of course, of course.
Wonderful. So we've been giving away a copy of your Supercharger Story course, and we talked off the air about doing something different. Do you have something else you want to give away, or should we just throw something together real quick?
I don't really have anything else.
That's okay. This week, we will give away a Best Page Forward book description for fun. Today is going to be the final day of a book description sale. So I do have book descriptions on the mind. Our winner of a Best Page Forward book description is Bradley. Bradley with no last name, please do email me at brian@sellingforauthors.com. Subject line, something like, I won a prize. And then we will give you said book description prize. And we really appreciate everyone who comments on the show. One of these days we'll respond to all of them or something. But anywho, let's go into the patrons. First one is The Busy, Busy Author by A. Dennis Davey. Want to write 50,000 words in a month, 70,000, or even 87,000? That's very specific. Your solution to finding more time to write may be at hand. If you are planning to conquer NaNoWriMo this year, or you simply want to get words on the page because you can't finish that novel or screenplay, pick up The Busy, Busy Author and see if it can work for you too. Over to you, Claire.
We have Leading Effectively by Mildred Stallworth. Proven leadership is having the capability to reach followers with strategic thinking. Leaders throughout the past frequently possessed specific qualities to create an atmosphere for others to learn and apply their concepts of leadership. The originality of a leader's individualities sets them apart by their physical characteristics, which made them unique. That is Leading Effectively
by Mildred Stallworth. So this is interesting. I was doing my 5 blurb mistakes webinar, and this blurb made me think about one of the things I talk about, which is too much context. It's easy to kind of bring up the importance of a subject with your nonfiction book. But if you are a leader looking for a book on leadership, you don't need to know about leadership. You just need to know this book has leadership strategy. So something to think about. I know, you know, that's a blurb we're reading aloud on the show, but hopefully that's helpful to Mildred and anyone else writing a nonfiction book coming up. One of my favorite book covers of all time, Dorothy and the Cane of Destiny by T.S. Brothers. Go look it up if you have not. As a teenager, Dorothy was bestowed one of the legendary powers of destiny. She was told she was meant to save the world, but 57 years later, she's still waiting. Now retired and suffering from the ailments of age, Dorothy and her band of cranky superhero friends will have to finally live up to their destiny and save the world from the evil master and his underlings. I think there's a line in the actual description about, did they bring an extra pair of Depends? There's some funny business in this here, Dorothy and the Cane of Justice. Go check it out for no other reason than the cover, and then read the book because it sounds really funny. Go be a patron at patreon.com/SMBS. You can get your book's description read aloud on the show, and you'll get the show 8 hours early, which for some of you is a lifetime. That just feels like a lot
of time. That struck me as very bleak. Like, some of you may not live that 8 hours.
So you better get the show early. Question of the week. What are you going to do to connect with the people that you want to connect with this year via the internet, since there are no in-person events? Claire, I believe you're up with the first one.
Sure. And as Johnson said, I've been going to so many more conferences this year because they're online. I've now scheduled time each day for professional development to watch a session, and I'm expanding my business because of all this newly learned knowledge.
Inez, who was a great speaker, you and her answered like 11 billion questions during the self-publishing live. And I still thank you for that. Yeah, that was a blast. Matthew Herman said, I think simply joining and posting in Facebook author groups of more successful authors in your genre that you follow could be a way to start connecting with other authors. Relevant posting and sharing within any author's group provides them with free content for their group, which benefits the author, their Facebook fans, and you. It's like a three-way win. That's really interesting.
Yeah, I like that.
Like, if you had someone who wrote in your genre post in your reader group, mm-hmm. would you be excited that, hey, people are posting? Or
absolutely. And I invite authors to do that frequently. Awesome. So yeah, it's
well,
great.
There we go.
I highly recommend saying, hey, I have this post. Like, do you want me to post it in your group? Because as someone who's been keeping this group alive, sometimes on life support, but yeah, keeping it alive for the last 2 years, it's like, yes, I will totally take your content.
That's awesome.
Enough readers to go around.
That is good to know.
And then Adam David Colling said, I'm well connected with a number of writing groups and communities that met via video conference long before COVID because they are geographically dispersed across Australia. So I'm just keeping on doing what I was doing.
And it's tough for folks who live in a time zone that maybe not a lot of other authors in your genre might live in.
You mean Australia, specifically Australia.
I'm Australia, New Zealand, Singapore, you know.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that keep on keeping on. If you know what works for you, keep on doing it. So we got some tips here. How about I play the tip sounder?
And now on the Selma Book Show, it's the tip of the week.
Tip number one, no more sad authors. A positive mindset may help authors counteract the upcoming seasonal affective disorder, according to The Guardian. Authors and other creatives often find the lethargy and mood challenges of sad worse than those with more traditional jobs and careers. Authors have to motivate themselves to get the work done. Many have used the conventional advice like light boxes and dosing themselves with drugs or supplements to no avail. If you've tried to fight sad and failed this year, why not think like a Norwegian? Parts of Norway get just 2 to 3 hours of indirect sunlight on a winter day, yet few show signs of the wintertime depression associated with sad. So what's their secret? Mindset. Studies have shown the positive mental framing of stressful events can powerfully influence how we're affected by them. Quote, people who see stressful events as challenges cope much better than those who focus on the downside, says psychologist Carrie Leibowitz. Try reframing your winter, noting the things you do enjoy, coziness of the season, qualities of the light, and even the wintry features like candles and firelight. All right. So Claire, what do you think about this? Should we all put on our Elsa capes and think like we are in Norway singing Let It Go? Or what do you think?
This is such a big discussion, right? Because we're talking about depression, you know. Talking to your doctor is a good start.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, there's this idea of toxic positivity where you're trying too hard to make things be okay.
So you have like the crazy eyes?
Yeah, yes. Yes. You've seen it then.
I have.
No, I mean, some things, I don't know much about Norwegian culture, but I do think that it's like, yeah, just embrace it and like allow yourself to be sad. And I think a lot of what our energy is expended on is trying to not feel what we're feeling. Mm. And I think there's a lot of stigma around feeling blue and feeling unmotivated. And so that stigma ends up making you feel even worse about it. So then you have feelings about your feelings. So, I mean, there's definitely something to this.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I do really like the idea. This was something I remember talking about in high school. Just you have like 7 classes a day and you don't like all of them. And so I remember in the really bad ones, trying to think about one thing that I did enjoy in that class and trying to focus a little more on that rather than spiraling down the disliking everything about this particular activity that I'm engaged in.
Yeah. I mean, I'm kind of in the camp that no matter what you're doing, there's something in your life you can be happy about, but that doesn't mean you have to like feel good all the time.
I agree.
For me, I mean, I have some friends who we all get sad in the winter and we just support each other. You know, you find people who are going through it and humor helps a lot. Really humor dark helps humor a lot. Is good for the winter.
Especially reading H. Claire Taylor's satire.
Yes. For, I don't know that it's prescription strength, but
good for every person. In every walk of life.
Won't offend anyone.
No caveats. All right. Number 2 is to you.
All right. It takes the pressure off. Trying to spend less time on social media, but worried you'll miss reaching your audience. Maximize your efforts by posting at the perfect times for maximum follower engagement, says Mark Walker Ford of Social Media Today. Sharing an infographic detailing the best posting days and times for Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, LinkedIn, and YouTube. You might be surprised to hear the best days to post on Facebook tend to be Saturday and Sunday, while those days are the worst for Twitter and LinkedIn. While the best posting time for your community will vary, says Walker Ford, quote, this is a good starting point for your audience research. Using this infographic, you can stop guessing and start posting. Create a social media schedule using this data, then adjust it to find the sweet spot for your audience.
I'm going to add the tip of schedule as much of it ahead of time as possible so that you can make it go away when
set
you
set it and forget it.
Yes, indeed. When you take your social media breaks, Claire, because I know that you try to avoid it when you don't need to be there as well. Do you ever feel this pull that you're worried that you won't catch a reader messaging you or that you'll miss some tip or some author that you look up to and something that they post? Do you ever feel that pull?
No, not really.
That's good.
I probably feel it on some sort of like really Pavlovian thing, like that knee jerk, like, oh, but what if I miss something, you know, that ambiguous something, but I don't usually, I know a lot of people get FOMO. Fear of missing out. I don't ever really have that because I like being home and I like being disconnected. It's really just like the sort of biological programming that keeps me on it. I don't personally think that I sell anything noticeable from social media. You know, I have a reader group that can kind of be useful sometimes, but I don't have any way of judging how much they're buying from me or any like that. Like I have a sneaking suspicion if I just went completely off of social media, I would still be able to sell books. So it's fine. But yeah, when I take those fasts, if there's something I need to post, like if I promise to promote someone else, schedule ahead of time for sure.
Yeah, that's really helpful. I definitely feel the pull as a person who runs these events on Facebook, but the reason I do them 4 times a year and not 12 times a year or something is so that I can have some of that time off in between. And if you do have the ability to hire someone to work 5 to 10 hours a week, and you can spend 5 to 10 hours ahead of time training that person to respond to things on social media, oh, does it make your life so much better?
That's what I had my assistant do.
It's just, And you have to put in time to tell that person what to say in certain situations, but it's worth it.
It is, which makes you go, man, do we really even need the social media thing? I mean, I know I'm kind of an outlier on that.
Yeah.
Don't go canceling all your accounts because I don't like it. But yeah, you just got to question it.
Yeah.
Got to question the value you're getting for the time and energy and mood you're spending on it.
Yeah. Yeah. All good points. Let's get into tip number three. Finish first, fiddle later. We've all heard the advice to write first, edit later, but easier said than done. Quote, there's more to succeeding at this than Herculean willpower. Technology can help, says editor Lisa Poiso, giving you her best tools for keeping your writing momentum going strong, such as using abbreviations to remind yourself to come back later. TK, phonetically short for to come, is a good abbreviation that allows you to move along, but also reminds you to loop back later and finish what you started. Use color to highlight the text that needs work rather than working on it now. For ease of navigation, learn to use words, styles, and headers, allowing you to jump around in the navigation pane instead of scrolling up and down. Finally, Poiseau says, try the ultimate writing momentum hack, internet blockers. Quote, it may seem pretty lame to rely on an app to keep you away from your apps, but these tools lift the crushing weight of responsibility and temptation from your shoulders. Couldn't agree more on the blocking the internet, disconnecting things, going to a location where there will be no internet, or working on something that has no internet capabilities like a Neo or Alpha Smart keyboard. Claire, I'm not big on doing abbreviations in phonetics, but what do you think about Poiseau's tips here?
That would be a strange thing for you to be like really big on. Like you just love it. I think
she loved it enough to share it.
She does. And there's a reason it's TK and not TC, right? Because you want to make sure that it doesn't appear at other places in your manuscript. So I do this. I mean, I use brackets because I don't ever use brackets in my writing. So like if I'm writing and I'm like, what is that character's name? I cannot remember it. I just do bracket name, you know? And so then when I go back through, that's such easy stuff to do all at once, right? It's like when we're talking about scheduling social media posts, you group it. So
yeah,
I do that. And I do use comments and that sort of thing. I don't use the highlighter, but it's really just about figuring out your own system so that you don't get stuck, because so much momentum can be drained by going, wait, what is that guy's name? And then being like, what chapter is that in? Going back to that chapter, scanning and being like, oh yeah, that's, I mean, I've written entire scenes where the character was an integral part of the scene and I couldn't remember his name. So there was a lot of like insert name here. And then, you know, like the owner or, you know, whatever, like I had a cherub mob boss recently. And so I was like, okay, I don't remember his name. I don't even know if I had given him a name at that point, but it was like, suddenly I needed it. So you just breeze through, have a sense of humor about the fact that you can't remember it. And then
you could do what I do and just misspell a character's last name in book two compared to book one. Cause that's what I did.
But it happens.
Mm-hmm.
I know. I started using Greek names for all of these little Greek cherubs in my story. And I was like, I can't keep doing these Greek
names. I've made a huge mistake.
Yes, absolutely. My note to my editor was like, I guarantee you this is misspelled multiple times.
That is funny. But yeah, I think it's awesome that Poiseau's shared some of her system here. Obviously, we all kind of need to come to our own systems. But if you don't have one, that means you try things. That means you test things out. You see, oh, this thing might work better. Like I have played around with some stuff for this October optimization challenge with landing page buttons and realized, oh, I made a mistake that may have cost a couple thousand dollars, but it's like, well, I've made that now, and now I know not to try that again. And so you, not all mistakes, thankfully, lose you that much money, but.
Yeah. You hope that they just lose you a little bit, maybe time or something.
10 minutes or so. Yeah, exactly.
Even just lose you a little bit of face. That's fine too.
I would love to lose more face here because honestly, feeling pretty plump on the video that Claire and I share here. Why don't we get into the top five news? And I believe you are up first.
It's time for the Sell More Book Show top five news. Number five.
Donde está el audiobook? Audible has launched an all-you-can-listen-to subscription service in Spain and Italy. Audible is the go-to platform for indies who want to sell audiobooks, says Allies Dan Holloway. Audiobooks are growing their sales and market share rapidly, but the fastest-growing platforms are not Audible, but services like Storytel and BookBeat, which have embraced all-you-can-eat audiobook subscriptions, while Audible stayed business as usual. But that has changed now that Audible has entered the Spanish and Italian marketplaces with its new subscription service. Quote, I've been warning indies for many months to prepare for the Spotification of audiobooks, says Holloway, and the potential devastating effects on income. The window to make those preparations feels like it might be closing fast. I love the dun, dun, dun. Patience in his quote here.
I know. I've been telling people.
All right, Cassandra, take it easy.
Yeah, yeah. We had just talked about Audible winding down one of their subscription services. And so this doesn't necessarily make top one or two as a result of us covering something very similar recently, but
better luck next time, Audible. You're going to have to pull bigger shenanigans than that.
I know. If you want number one or number two, I did not like audiobooks or Audible's subscription plan with Audible Escape. That it did seem to compensate authors less. And so I don't love the idea that they are expanding into other territories, mimicking some of the successes in those territories by using the thing that did not work in the US. But I guess they kind of threw in the towel on a la carte, which they use in the States. So I don't know. I think that this is something that I hope doesn't work just for the purposes of authors getting Spotified, as Dan mentioned.
I really think we should start listening to Dan.
I know. Dan, I was just showing my daughter the movie Chicken Little for the first time. And she's like, Chicken Little says the sky is falling. Why does he say the sky is falling? But because I digress.
Amazon changed their policies. That's why.
Oh, yeah.
Did you tell her that?
I should have. She's smart. She would have gotten it. So there's not much we can do here about these audiobooks in Spain and Italy. Do you think there's, like, aside from not going exclusive, so you could maybe sell audiobooks off your own website or using another platform in the future, any action anybody needs to take?
I don't know. I mean, maybe just prepare. Don't, if 90% of your income is on audiobooks, maybe start diversifying. You know, if it's like 90% from Audible. I don't know. I mean, this is just how the industry goes, isn't it?
Yeah. And
we're here because we're adaptable. The people who are adaptable stick around.
Yep. You may need to pivot from time to time in order to keep profitable. So let's go into numero quattro.
Number four.
No more 80-20 rule. No more sad authors. No more 80-20 rule. Your Facebook ads just got easier. For years, advertisers were prohibited from using more than 20% text in images. Then Facebook confused everyone with their OK/low/medium/high scales that limited ad distribution based on the amount of text. Quote, and now, says marketing expert John Loomer, all enforcement appears to be dead. End quote. What does this mean practically? No more grid tools showing you how to limit your text to 20%. No more seeking exceptions for book covers and no more warnings. This change has been confirmed by multiple advertisers who have been informed privately by Facebook reps, says Loomer, though no official statement has been released. In related news, Facebook has rolled out a new call to action button series of tools for pages, inviting readers to join your list, visit your site, asking a question with a click, or your cover photo button. If you want to check out the competition, Facebook Pages to Watch is a new feature, lets you keep track of competitors' pages to see how your brand is measuring up. For instructions on these new tools and more, visit the article at sproutsocial.com. So, Claire, I know Facebook ads aren't the type of ad you've used the most of all your ads I have an agency that runs my Facebook ads for me, though I'm very interested in the creative and copy that they use, certainly. Let's start with this no more 20% text feature. Did Facebook just lose all its advertisers and so it wants to make things easier? What do you think?
I have no idea, Brian.
Speculate.
I'm just glad that it's gone. I've always thought that was super stupid.
Yeah.
Because it always picks up on book covers, text on book covers, even though they're like, oh, well, you can get it manually approved. It's like, but just get rid of it. So.
Yeah. It definitely seems like it's not the best use of time to be tweaking things to try to get it down from 21% to 19% so the ad will run more effectively. I'm a big fan of, let's just make things easier.
Yep. I think that there's something to text because not everyone wants their sound on, you know, and it's, you can just put that in there. I readers especially are attracted to text, right? Yeah. So you could do more, especially for marketing books. You could, you know, scrolling passages that people can sit and read. There's just so much more that we can do now.
I just want secret passages in my Facebook ad. So it like sneaks people and they're like, oh, I'm in WhatsApp now. I don't know. I don't really know what that would.
Through the dark web.
Definitely, you'd have to go through the dark web. You have to click the pie sign. Dennis Miller would be involved. So this joke is getting too inside. My daughter has an inside joke with one of her teachers at daycare. It was from back when she was babysitting Riley a while ago. And she just says, Happy Hanukkah to my daughter when it's not Hanukkah. But she's like, that's my inside joke, Daddy.
Oh,
really cute. Other thing, Facebook pages to watch. Are you going to stalk your competition, Claire?
Oh, I thought you were about to say stalk my exes. No, I would never do that, first of all.
Never would stalk exes on Facebook. Doesn't happen.
But I would like it to be known that I'm way better off than all of them are at this point, just from what I've heard. I don't really know much about this pages to watch feature. I don't think that it's beneficial to keep track of your competitors' pages. I mean, I guess if you want to do some market research, but like how much of it is going to be market research and how much of it is going to just be like fueling your envy and hatred?
Scowling.
Yeah. It should be pages to scowl at.
I like that. It might have a better abbreviation. I don't know. Awesome. Well, let's go into the next one. And I believe it is you.
Number 3.
15 ways to market a book. The most deadly mistake you can make with your writing is not having a marketing plan for your book, says author C.S. Lakin on theselfpublisher.com. Writing your book is the easy part, says Lakin. Then comes planning and executing your book launch, developing pricing strategies, marketing and promoting, building a fan base, assembling a street team, and developing a mailing list. Lakin gives you 15 ways to market your book, starting with some simple tips for social media, taking SEO to your books and author platform, pricing, promos, giveaways, reviews, email lists, and more. After reading the list of ideas, experiment, test, engage with your readers. Quote, there are no rules other than the ones you create, says Lakin. There's no perfect book marketing strategy. Each author is different. What's important to remember is that marketing your book is important. How you do it is part of the fun, but doing it is essential.
One of the things that I struggle with as a teacher, because I definitely consider myself a teacher of self-publishing, is how do you teach someone the steps of what to do in a very long process that's evolving over time without overwhelming people? And, you know, I almost like market research, kind of downloading other author teachers' freebies just to see, like, well, what is everybody else sharing with their people? And there are some people that are like, here's 50 ways to do a thing. And there are some people that are like, here's one way to do a thing. And I think it's really helpful to know the landscape, to know the 15 things you need to do. But I think that it's really beneficial to know what should I do first and what's the first thing I should do within that first thing, because it's scary otherwise.
It is. And you raise an interesting point that a lot of the people who are a little bit farther along in this industry and in their career right now, when they look back on what it was like for them starting out and the things that they had to do, the specific steps that they had to take to get going, those steps are not the same as the first steps you take to get going now, because right. So much about the industry has changed. So it's like, who is the expert on the first steps to take now? No one really. No one right. has the experience with these steps right now. So it's all kind of experimentation and things. There are some things that are going to stay the same, right? We are still on about the mailing lists. Mm-hmm. We are still on about creating, you know, getting the right pricing. Pricing has changed how you want to strategize it, but figuring out how to get the right price and looking at the market has not changed. So yeah, it is tough. And yeah. There's so much to do to start. Yeah. Not to discourage people, but to say, like, if you feel like there's so much to do, it's not just you. Like, there is a lot.
Yeah, it's because there definitely is a lot. When you were saying, like, who's the expert now? It had me thinking about, like, why I'm so glad I've been doing coaching and doing a lot of these trainings for beginners, because it's like, you know, it's like a grandparent with watching their grandkids and running and chasing after them, saying like, it keeps me young. That's kind of how I feel like working with all these folks who are just starting out. It kind of keeps me fresh to getting to see like, oh, well, that's a thing now. Okay, I guess that's what we're doing. And that's really helpful. And I think that if you are in the boat of teaching something, if you do teach through nonfiction or anything, go back to the beginning of the process sometimes and just say like, okay, how would I do this now? Oh, well, that button moved. Oh, that changed. Let's re-record this thing. Cause that's the tough thing about this. It is 2020 as we record this episode. Soon it will be 2021. And that means the things from 2011 are no longer.
Oh gosh, yeah.
Yeah, they're no longer the same.
Yeah, so. RIP to all of that knowledge.
It was a good run, knowledge.
Well, right. And I mean, that's why I love doing the storytelling coaching, because that stuff is pretty much, it's about what, it's not changing as much as marketing. But every time you start a new pen name, you kind of have to learn all this from scratch too.
That's true. That's true.
You go, wait, how do I get my first 100 subscribers to this new list?
Oh, yeah. Preaching to the choir for sure. All right, let's go back into number two.
Number two.
Help us, Barnes & Noble. You're our only hope. It seems everyone wants Barnes & Noble to survive, but can James Dauntless save it? B&N supplies about 2/3 of shelf space for books in the United States, says industry expert Mike Schatzkin on Jane Friedman's blog. B&N collapsed, smaller trade presses would be hurt the most, since they have fewer outlets, such as big box stores, for their books. Big publishers would find it less efficient but doable, while smaller presses would have a tough time. Without B&N, should Amazon's physical bookstores continue, then all publishing roads would finally lead to Seattle. Ultimately, more authors might move to Amazon Publishing for its status as the reigning producer and retailer of books. Quote, stranglehold is Schatzkin's word for the grip Amazon would have on the business, end quote, says Friedman. There's a chance for Barnes & Noble, considering Daunt turned Waterstones around. However, he used some tough tactics, angering publishers. Daunt wants to give his booksellers the autonomy to curate their stores and make sure the books that customers want to buy are in front of them. Quote, ultimately, we will sell more. Customers will come into the store more. Publishers will sell more. That is the happy outcome that should reconcile publishers to this new model, says Daunt. I'm not a publisher. I mean, I'm a publisher in the same way all indies are publishers. We publish books. We are mini publishing companies, but I'm not a traditional publishing company. And so I'm not necessarily privy to what Daunt's new business model is for Barnes & Noble and how publishers would be upset with it. But it does seem like for publishers, they're caught between a rock and a hard place. If they don't get on board with whatever Daunt's plan is here, then Barnes & Noble could finally, you know, bite the big one, which would really cause a problem for a lot of publishers. So it seems like it's either Daunt's way or the highway, from what I can tell. But that doesn't really impact us too terribly much. What are your thoughts on this, Claire?
I mean, my thoughts are mostly from the reader perspective of like, no, not Barnes & Noble. I love going to Barnes & Noble.
Yeah.
I miss it. I love just being there. It was my first job was Barnes & Noble. Mm-hmm. And I wrote my first book in a Barnes & Noble, mostly. I mean, not like all in one sitting, obviously. It's a nice place to have. There just aren't, I mean, there's indie bookstores and that sort of thing that hopefully will stay open, but
right.
I would be sad to see it go. I don't know. That's not great. Like business commentary. I hope,
but obviously, you know, like
go down,
it goes to show, because there are millions of people who feel the same way as you, but that has not propped up Barnes & Noble to this point. Mm-hmm. And so in the midst of the pandemic, it's unlikely to have more of an effect unless Barnes & Noble starts a GoFundMe.
Right. Yeah, I hope they don't do that, because that's weird.
I mean, I was kidding, but yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I guess they were kind of on the edge already because they weren't adapting before the pandemic and their prices are just so high.
Yeah.
So, but I still go to bookstores and buy books and spend the exorbitant amount now and then. But yeah, the pandemic is just not good for anyone. I mean, it's like Barnes & Noble isn't the only establishment, big, you know, longtime establishment we never thought we'd say goodbye to that is now at the edge of collapse. So hopefully it will last. I don't know.
Yeah.
It would not be good. I mean, that is the main competitor. And now that Amazon's open brick and mortar stores, yikes, because they can afford to rent at a loss.
Yeah. Yes, they can.
And their brick and mortar stores are in no jeopardy of closing.
Barnes & Noble had the number two ebook store in the US. And I don't know where they fit worldwide. I know that the first thing they got rid of was their UK store. And Barnes & Noble decided to stop working as, you know, intently on its ebook store, one thing, so as to focus more on the brick and mortar. Mm-hmm. But
I mean, to be clear, it is their fault that this is the situation they find themselves in.
Yes.
They should have been adapting much, much sooner.
There's a lot of value in being the number two of anything. The number two ebook retailer would be a source of income.
Right. But number two with how much space, right? It's like if I ran against Usain Bolt, I would be number two, but is it really much of a race, right?
So, but Barnes & Noble could have invested more earlier to make it a, you know, Justin Gatlin or whoever some other sprinter is.
Insert sports reference here.
To be a more competition, but that wasn't what they chose to focus their business on. And I don't know, maybe it wasn't a mistake for them, but it does seem like they haven't been doing very well for many years now.
Right. They've just been a little bit slow on the changes and they haven't given themselves the best advantage. That being said, it's really hard to blame anyone for not thriving, any business for not thriving in this strange situation we now find ourselves in.
Yes. Agreed. And I think everyone else will agree that it is time for the number one story, and it's to you.
And now the number one top five news item.
Amazon giveth, Amazon taketh away. Amazon dominates the world of books, but its focus is on the reader, not the writer. Quote, while that's not likely a surprise to anyone, writes Jane Friedman, here are the key developments that authors need to know about. End quote. For instance, Amazon has pulled back on most of its writer-focused programs launched in the last decade, including Kindle Singles, Kindle Serials, Kindle Worlds, Kindle Scout, and Kindle Press. Write On by Kindle, Amazon's version of Wattpad, Amazon's story writer, story builder, and Amazon's literary journal day one. But, says Friedman, Amazon has doubled down on its own traditional publishing program, Amazon Publishing, end quote. Amazon now has more than a dozen active traditional publishing imprints and creates its own bestseller lists, which its imprints dominate, obviously, making it difficult for the other publishers to break out new authors. While many indie authors rely on Amazon exclusively, it's important to keep in mind that things can and will change. So be prepared and ready for change. I feel like this could be the headline for so many stories we do.
It is true, but it's interesting. We've talked about a couple of these ending like Kindle Worlds and Kindle Scout. I know we've talked about how those programs ended, but it's interesting to see it all in context. Here's my question to you, Claire, because you have all the answers, which is Amazon can afford to run at a loss, right?
Mm-hmm. I feel like I should have that tattooed somewhere on me. Like a memento style, like all the reminders.
Yeah, exactly. And if they can afford to run at a loss, but they turned these programs off, it means that either some benchmark that they aimed to hit was not met, or the, you know, the program just was meant to be this short-term thing that did achieve its objective and it was shut down. So the question is really, which is it? Was it hoping that Kindle Worlds would get them deals with bigger, like the Marvel Cinematic Universe or something? Was it that they expected Write On by Kindle to be bigger than Wattpad? Did they expect the literary journal Day One to win some kind of award? Or did they just say, we got more KDP authors, or we got more readers, or obviously it could be a mix of both, depending on which of the things. My question is, Claire, which do you think is more likely, that they were like just gathering up resources, or that they had hoped these would do better than they actually did? What do you think?
I don't know. I mean, I would assume that it's probably a little bit of both, because a lot of these, not all of them, but a lot of them did draw people to Amazon. And some of these still have, I believe some of these still give Amazon exclusive rights to some of the stuff, so they can still make some money off of it. Like you said, they are okay to run at a loss, but if things are running at a loss and it doesn't look like they're ever going to not run at a loss, they're canceling them, right? So they're good running at a loss temporarily with the promise of more money. So it could have been that some of these things they thought would make them more money, and then they looked at their projections and go, no, this is never going to turn around. Or like Kindle Serials, Serials were a trend for a while, in like a reading trend.
Right.
So if the trend changes and people don't read Serials anymore, they're going to cut that program. So I think it's just a mixture of a lot of different things.
It totally makes sense. I think that Jim, who was on the show last week, used to always talk about thinking that the industry would go with shorter books, that shorter ebooks would win the ebook wars, although I don't remember them happening. And the Kindle Singles and Kindle Serials do kind of fit with those shorter trends. So that really makes sense. Kindle Scout, Kindle Worlds did gather some more readers. And maybe they just said, we're devoting people to this. Why don't we just devote them to our presses, since similar skill sets are needed?
Oh, absolutely. And some of their imprints do dominate the charts, their own charts, right? So it's like, oh, let's make ourselves the place people go to, and then let's promote our own stuff at the very top of it. It's a great strategy to make a ton of money.
Yeah. Yeah.
And for it, and you know, it does benefit the authors. You know, if you can get signed with them, you're making good money. Like, if they're going to promote your books on their platform, like, I don't think Barnes & Noble ever was like, oh, we're going to have Barnes & Noble exclusive writers, and they're going to be big time, and you're going to see them at the very front of the store all the time. Right. Yeah. If you imagine like an actual physical storefront, it would be like you walk in and that first table that has all the bestsellers, all Barnes & Noble writers. So it is mutually beneficial if you can get one of those.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. It would be nice, but it's like getting into Harvard or any other really, really less than 1% endeavor. It's going to probably require you to sell a lot of books in the first place in order to get noticed. So we need a question of the week. We've got a few interesting angles. These programs that are no longer with Amazon, the Barnes & Noble efforts to succeed, thinking more simply about where to start with our marketing, the 20% rule with the Facebook text. Any particular directions you'd be interested in exploring, Claire, in a question of the week?
Yeah, I really like kind of going back to the beginning. So maybe something like looking back, what was the most valuable thing you did your first year in this industry for marketing?
I really like that. Winner, you can answer that question of the week over at sellmorebookshow.com in the comments section for episode 339. We're just trucking. We're going to be at 350 before you know it, which is pretty awesome and exciting. But yeah, Claire, I'll give you the option this week. You can put out a piece of wisdom or you can defer to me. I hadn't given you the option before, but if you have something, because now I've been, you know, it's almost, this is the Pavlovian wisdom here. Your now brain just gets these nuggets of gold.
Right. My eyes roll back in my head and just wisdom. Mm,
the Cassandra up. Thing right there. Yeah.
Well, I would say I do have some wisdom. I have a suggestion that everyone open up their calendar and schedule a week off sometime. Doesn't have to be soon, but just you can take a week off from whatever you're doing work-wise. That is even really important work. You can take a week off. So even if it's like spring of 2021, get it on the calendar.
I like that. Do it.
It's crazy. Get crazy with your time off.
Spring break 2021. We're going to go in the backyard.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, great wisdom, Claire. Thank you for sharing it. I appreciate that. And do keep us up to speed about the book. We all love to get more knowledge. So we do appreciate that coming our way soon. Anything else you want to share before we hop off here?
Nah, I'm good. How about you, Brian?
Me?
Wisdom, some nuggets.
I'm full of nuggets, especially after I made some chicken nuggets for my daughter last week. And I will say, I'll double down on what you have put out there. If you notice that work is coming along more slowly than usual and you can't seem to get out of a funk, it could mean that you might need to move those days off earlier in the calendar in an effort to rejuvenate so that you don't burn out before that vacation comes.
True that.
Well, thank you for listening to this week's show. As always, you can go over to iTunes and leave us a review. Even if you are not an iTunes listener, you can go over to iTunes and say, hey, I just discovered this podcast. It's okay, 3 stars. So you can go put, I'm saying you can put an honest customer review on the pod. It doesn't have to be 3 stars. I'm just saying I don't want to influence you.
I was about to say you just influenced them. You just did a little inception thing on them.
Yeah, well, we'll see. We'll see what happens. But head on over, leave us a review. It helps us to connect with new listeners. For H. Claire Taylor, I'm Brian Cohen. Go check out my upcoming challenge, sellingforauthors.com/October. Starts October 12th, the day before my birthday, which is very, very exciting. Yeah, we will see you next week. Have a great week of book selling, everybody. And we'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the Sell More Book Show. Visit the website at www.sellmorebookshow.com for detailed show notes and subscription information, or to send us news or comments for use on the show. Also, please take a moment to subscribe to the show and leave us a review. Thank you very much for listening, and happy bookselling!